Chapter 10. The Sperm Whale. A gentle wind took the Pequod northeast across the Indian Ocean toward the island of Java. Sometimes in the moonlight, the silver spout of water would still be seen in the distance. Then, one quiet, calm, sunny morning, Dagoo shouted and pointed from the main masthead.
"There! There she blows!"
he shouted excitedly.
"Straight ahead! The white whale! The white whale!"
Hearing this, all the seamen rushed to the rigging to see their prey at last. Ahab, looking out from the bow at a huge white shape in the distance, ordered the boats to be lowered. The four boats were soon pulling quickly toward it, with Ahab's boat in front. Then, the white shape disappeared, and we all stopped rowing, waiting to see the thing again. When it reappeared, we were amazed. The enormous shape floated on the water, with a huge number of long arms reaching out from its center. The arms, maybe 20 or 30 feet long, moved in all directions as if they were snakes searching for prey. But we could not see a face. Then it slowly disappeared again. Starbuck, still looking at the place where it had been, spoke wildly.
"I would rather have seen Moby Dick and fought him than seen this white ghost, this ominous evil thing."
"What was it, sir?" said Flask.
"The great white squid. Few whalers have ever seen it and returned home to speak about it," Starbuck said.
Ahab said nothing. He turned his boat and went back to the Pequod, with the rest of us silently following him. However, when I was with Queequeg later, he told me he was superstitious in a different way.
"When you see him squid," he said, "then you quick see him sperm whale."
The next day, Queequeg was proved right. It was my turn to stand at a masthead. I was almost asleep in the still, hot air, and so were the lookouts on the other two masts. I think all the seamen in the ship were nearly asleep. Then, suddenly, with a shock, I came back to life. There, not very far away, was a huge sperm whale. I shouted those three words, "There she blows!" And 20 other voices copied my shout.
"Lower the boats!" shouted Ahab.
But before the boats were in the water, the whale had disappeared. Ahab ordered everyone to stop rowing and to speak in whispers. We floated silently along, Stubb leaning back in his boat and lighting his pipe. When the whale appeared again, it was close to Stubb's boat, and it was obvious that it knew the hunters were there.
"After him!" cried Stubb. "Pull hard, Tashtego! Pull hard, boys!"
Tashtego gave a loud cry, and the boat rushed forward. Dagoo and Queequeg, the other two harpooners, shouted too.
"Stand up, Tashtego!" cried Stubb. "Throw it! Throw it now!"
Tashtego aimed the harpoon and threw it with all his strength into the body of the poor animal. Then all the rowers pushed their oars in the opposite direction to try to slow the boat as the line followed the harpoon it was tied to. Finally, the line between the whale and the boat was pulled tight, and the boat crashed on through the water as the whale tried to escape.
"Pull the line in!" cried Stubb.
As the boat was dragged forward by the whale, all the seamen began pulling the line to get closer to the whale. When the boat got close enough, Stubb threw lance after lance into its side. Red rivers poured from it, like rivers running down a mountain. The whale did not swim in water now, but in blood. The light from the sun shining on the bright red sea made the faces of all the seamen look red, too.
Pull closer!
Cried Stubb, as the whale's strength began to weaken. He leaned over the bow of the boat, pushing a final lance into it, turning it until he hit the poor animal's heart. The dying animal began to crash around in the water, and Stubb's boat pulled away from it until at last there was a spout of blood instead of water.
He's dead, Mr. Stubb,
said Tashtego.
Yes, said Stubb.
He took his pipe out of his mouth, shook the ash over the water, and looked thoughtfully at the body of the whale. The three boats slowly pulled the body back toward the ship. Darkness fell, but three lights on the Pequod's main rigging guided us back to her. Ahab gave orders that the body of the whale should be tied to the ship for the night, but he did not seem very interested in it. Perhaps the kill had only reminded him that he had not yet killed Moby Dick. The next morning, we began the long job of cutting all the valuable parts from the whale's body. These Nantucket whaling men were skilled at their jobs, having done this work so many times before. The men pulled enormous wooden blocks up the masts, with long ropes tied to them. At the ends of these ropes were huge hooks. Starbuck and Stubb cut a hole in the body which lay beside the ship and attached a blubber hook to the blubber. As the mates cut the blubber away from the body, slowly the hook was raised back up the mast, each time pulling a piece of blubber from the whale. The whale turned over and over in the water, as if the blubber was the skin being taken off a piece of fruit. As one hook carried away a piece of blubber, another hook was attached to the next piece. Then the enormous pieces of blubber were coiled carefully down into the hold. And so the work continued, with every man doing his own job, and the sound of shouting and singing, and the ship rocking from side to side with the huge weight on each of the hooks. The blubber room, as it was called, was part of the hold, and it was a terrifying place for an inexperienced seaman. Men working in pairs used incredibly sharp tools to cut the blubber into pieces, which is a difficult job when a ship is being rocked by waves. These men always work with bare feet, and many of them have cut off their own toes by accident. Oil from sperm whales is very valuable, which is why the Pequod had sailed all this way and experienced such danger. Maybe it is a strange thing to say, but I learned to love one part of its preparation. Some of the blubber was liquid, but there were also hard lumps in it. I was one of the men who had to squeeze these lumps and make them back into liquid. The blubber was all so soft, and strangely, it smelled as beautiful as spring flowers. Squeeze, squeeze, squeeze. All morning I did this, and sometimes I found myself squeezing other men's hands as they did the same work. We would smile at each other as we all shared such a friendly, loving feeling. As I sat there on deck, under a calm blue sky, I forgot about mad old Ahab and his crazy plan to get revenge on Moby Dick. At 9 o'clock that night, the final stage of the work started, so that the oil could be kept in barrels until the Pequod returned to Nantucket. Between two of the masts was the Tryworks, which was built from bricks. The Tryworks was a kind of oven, where parts of the whale were cooked to become oil. Perhaps something made of bricks seems a strange thing to have on a wooden ship. It contained two huge metal tripods, and fires were lit under these. Only bricks could safely hold the fire. Between this brick oven and the deck was a large, shallow container filled with water. As the heat of the fires boiled the water in it, the crew regularly added fresh, cold water to the tank. This meant the deck of the ship remained cool and could not catch fire. By midnight, we had sailed away from the body of the whale. The wind was stronger, and it was very dark. The whale's head hung from one side of the Pequod's bow. The harpooners were throwing pieces of blubber into the tripods while the fire lit the faces of the seamen on the deck and the smoke disappeared up into the sky. The wind whistled, and the ship rushed through the waves. I was steering the ship that night, and it seemed to me that the smoke, the black night, and the fire gave a picture of the madness of Captain Ahab.